Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by ServPro. Cleaning, restoration, construction.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I heard a little bit of a clip from Deion Sanders, the Colorado coach, yesterday. I'm not sure when he said it. I believe it's been within the last couple of days, but talking about two of his stars, his son, Shedeur Sanders, his prize wide receiver, Travis Hunter, and about where they might be drafted in next spring's NFL draft. And Deion very matter-of-factly said that both of them would be taken to the top four, that one of them be taken number one overall, and the other one wouldn't last past number four. That is a lot of confidence, of course, from Deion Sanders, who never seems to suffer from a lack of confidence about these kinds of things. And when you think about what Deion is, a coach at a major program, you're forced to, you know, kind of just sort of make the comparison of, we don't hear stuff like that at Georgia, right? That's just not the way that it goes. And it's not just Deion saying those type of things. Do you remember the other day when we were talking about some of those guys on, like, say, the Ohio State defense? They're back to win a national championship. Could have gone to the NFL draft, but they're back to win a national championship. The one guy was like, we're going to be legendary. We're going to be unstoppable. We're going to be all this kind of stuff. You know, even they are kind of out there sort of speaking and talking and boasting in a way that you just don't really hear from Georgia. We've said this before, that Georgia likes to go about its business during spring practice in kind of a quiet way. But that doesn't mean that Georgia doesn't have, I think, potentially a lot to be excited about, especially right now, I would say, on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, just say this out loud for a moment. Georgia brings back a quarterback here this year in Carson Beck that is being treated as the top returning quarterback in all of college football. And while there'll be some competition for this, including from Shedeur Sanders, I guess, there is a chance that next year that Carson Beck's generating all the chatter, and if not more, that a Caleb Williams or a Drake May or, you know, a Jaden Daniels or any of these quarterbacks are being talked about right now ahead of this year's NFL draft. There's a chance that this time next year, Carson Beck's generating even more of that kind of stuff as he perhaps, you know, works his way into being the number one overall pick in next year's draft. And if you've got a quarterback like that on a team like Georgia, not only are you potentially in the national championship business, but you're perhaps doing so with a playing personality that's far different than anything we've kind of typically seen from this Kirby Smart era. This could be, we expect it to be, a much more quarterback-driven team than we've seen Kirby Smart have in the past. And I say that knowing full well how good Stetson Bennett was. Couple of years worth of national championships from him. He was a Heisman finalist, of course, in 2022. And by the way, good news on Stetson this week, too, that he's going to get a chance to start doing some workouts again with the LA Rams. We wish him well as he does that. But the point is, even with a quarterback like Stetson, who had the success that he had, this year's Georgia team has a chance to be far more quarterback-driven than even those Stetson-Bennett teams were. So checking in on the progress of Carson Beck and how this spring is going for him as he gets ready for such a pivotal campaign here in 2024, that's always going to be a really interesting thing to do. This time a week ago, Kirby Smart was asked about Carson Beck, but what the spring is about for him, what he needs to do as he looks to take that next step in his development. And one of the things that Kirby Smart mentioned is the comfort he has with some of the guys he's going to be throwing to here this year. This is what Kirby Smart said about that last week.
Yeah, I think one of the big challenges for him is being comfortable and trusting the receivers around him. You know, he's had the fortune and misfortune of Brock and Ladd and Marcus Roseme being in the lineup, but yet he's also had the misfortune of them not being in the lineup. And as a quarterback, you know, you ask any good quarterback, they like wide receivers they trust, they know, they have intuitive ability to think the same way, and there's a lot of change in that room right now. So showing confidence in himself and showing confidence in those players to do their job and trust them is a big part of it. That trust is not given, it's earned, and they're earning his trust, and it goes both ways.
I think that's certainly a very compelling description there from Kirby Smart, and I think the idea that you're left with, this is not like a case of senioritis for Beck where he's just sort of biding his time in a spring practice that doesn't matter before you get to a fall where things start to matter. As Kirby Smart says, no, the work that's being done for him right now, this is crucial work right now that you've got to get on the same page. So many new receivers, some of them young guys playing more, some of them newcomers to the program, and you've got to get on the same page with them. You've got to develop chemistry with them. You've got to use Smart's word, find confidence in these guys that when you get ready to release the football, you know they're going to be there, and you know they're going to be able to haul it down for you because of the work that you've done in spring practices like this. We've had Jake Fromm on the show frequently over the course of the last few months. That's one of the topics that oftentimes comes up of, you know, how does a quarterback get on the same page with newcomers or young guys who'd be playing more? And Jake's always shared some, I think, really interesting things about that and certainly helped us understand all of that. But Kirby Smart speaks to that right there, and I think he speaks to it well. The thing that Smart doesn't say there, but is obviously the unspoken subtext to all of this is that George in the last 3 years, essentially as explosive and as productive as any offense in America. That's not the brand of the program. That's not the reputation of the program. But those are the facts, that Georgia is, along with USC, one of only two teams in America to score 40 points per game in each of the last two seasons. It was essentially a 40-point offense in 2021 there as well, that Georgia has been year over year over year as consistently as any offense in America has been. But one of the key cogs in that success, in fact, one of the only players to play on that for all 3 years, Brock Bowers, he's no longer here. So there is a symbolic void left behind in his absence, but there's also a massive, very tangible statistical void that gets and needs to be filled with Brock Bowers no longer here. So whether it's receivers stepping up or a handful of guys in the tight end room, whatever it is, that is just a very important thing for Georgia, kind of finding out who produces the statistical production that Bowers brought to this offense over and over and over. And if Georgia's going to be as successful offensively as it has been, finding someone to produce that, or a handful of guys to produce that, well, that's going to be one of the most important jobs facing Georgia here this spring. Now, the good news is there are a lot of potential answers as to who that might be. And this is where you kind of circle back to what I was talking about off the top of the show here today. Georgia doesn't do the hype train stuff. In fact, the only thing we've heard Kirby Smart hype up all spring long is his new starting center and the fact that he can't wait for the world to see Jared Wilson. I'm not making a lot of that. I think that's really good news. But that's the sort of thing that Kirby Smart likes to hype up. Oh, my gosh, wait till you see how hard our center works. Wait till you see how hard he practices. And that's a good thing. I'm not making a lot of it, but it's the kind of thing that if Kirby hypes something up, that's what he's going to hype. But just because you're not hearing much right now, at least publicly and on the record, from some of this stuff related to the Georgia offense, doesn't mean there aren't some hypeable newish players, you know, guys stepping up into a new role or just sort of fresh and new with the program. That doesn't mean they don't somewhat exist around this program here right now. One of the things we talked to Terrence Edwards about last week, we're going to talk to him more when he joins us this week, is like a guy like Colby Young as a transfer wide receiver, most recently at Miami. You've heard us say before, if the buzz around him is real, what that might mean. His ability to kind of be a red zone target and give Georgia an opportunity to find a little bit more balance between its passing touchdowns and receiving touchdowns, and that might make Georgia a little bit more difficult to defend against, a little bit more of a sure thing to get, as we said before, kind of a baseline goal of, can you score 30 every game? It's a big, ambitious goal. But if you could, you're talking about this Georgia offense perhaps being historic. And if it's going to be historic, you need other players to step up there as well. And that's where I keep kind of going back to what I thought was a very fun conversation the other day. When Marcus Rosemy Jackson, who I've always loved, I had great respect for Rosemy Jackson as a player. I just thought he played the game the right way at Georgia. And when he was speaking at Georgia's Pro Day the other day, as a lot of these players often do, he was talking about, you know, what is left behind at Georgia with him now moving on to the NFL, guys he expected to step up. And his answer includes, you know, a lot of the guys that you sort of expect because of their veteran status, but he also kind of gets to someone that there's also seemingly some growing buzz around right now who could be ready for a much bigger role here this season. So let me give you a kind of a compilation of a couple of answers here. Rosemy Jackson on what's next for Georgia wide receiver, and one guy in particular that he thinks the entire Dog Nation could be very, very happy to see come this fall. Good stuff here from Marcus Rosemy Jackson.
Yeah, there's a few young guys in there, but it's Georgia. They're going to have to grow up. You know, Coach Smart ain't going to play. They're going to put them in the fire. And, you know, they're going to come, they're going to step to the plate, I feel like. So whatever the case may be, I just feel like they're going to be ready when it's time to play.
Yeah, with you and Ladd heading out, two of the older guys in the room, who do you think is going to step up as that kind of leadership role in that room?
Arian, Ra-Ra, Dom, Dylan. That's Yeah, that's probably the oldest guys in the. I feel like little Ant, Evan's gonna be able to, he gonna step up a little piece too. He's a baller. He's a baller. Straight up.
I like that from Marcus Rosemead Jackson. He's talking about Anthony Evans. He says he's a baller. He's gonna step up, and he says it again that Anthony Evans is a baller. And isn't that fun? Isn't that fun to consider here? And doesn't that make you more excited for April 13th on G Day? Because to be honest with you, Georgia needs some ballers. You know why? Because Brock Bowers was a baller. Now he's balling his way to the NFL, and he's going to be a very high draft pick. And in his wake, some new ballers need to step up. If you talk to 10, 20, 30, you know, educated Georgia fans who have, you know, well-informed opinions about the team, and you start asking them, hey, who is going to step up for Georgia this year? I think you get a good number of answers. You know, our buddy Terrence Edwards has talked about Ra-Ra Thomas, for instance. And other Georgia fans, you know, might mention other names there as well. And there's nothing wrong with kind of a multitude of choices, but you need to make sure you're increasing that number as much as you possibly can. And Anthony Evans is a guy that we saw used in a pretty creative way in the SEC championship against Alabama, although a game in which the Dogs came up short. Remember the punt return he had there? Saw more of him in that Orange Bowl game against Florida State there too. And so all of that potentially validates what Marcus Rosemead Jackson says. He's seen with his own eyes the fact that Evans could be a baller, getting a chance to catch some big balls from Carson Beck here this year. It's one of the reasons why, even though you're not hearing a ton of hype about it and Georgia doesn't sort of blow this up the way the other programs might, this Georgia offense has a chance to be a ton of fun here this season. We get a preview of that coming up on G-Day on April 13th. But when the season arrives, a Georgia team perhaps defined more by its quarterback play than any previous iteration of the Kirby Smart era, and a team that's just as explosive as any offense Georgia's had. That could be what's on the way here this fall. And obviously for Dog fans, that'd be a lot of fun to watch. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Good to have you with us here today, and great to our friends at ServPro for making it all possible. We appreciate them being with us and you live on video, 10 a.m. across all platforms, radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Podcasts wherever you find them, Apple, Spotify, everything in between, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Let me also give you a little bit of an apology about something here real quick. So today I'm wearing this sort of like rain windbreaker. It gets very rainy here in the Atlanta area where we're doing the show. I sort of feel like I'm swishing a lot every time I move. I have a hard time sitting still as I'm talking. I just sort of shake when I'm talking. I feel like every time I do, I'm hearing in the microphone, so I apologize for that in advance. But nonetheless, we are glad to have you as a part of the program and glad to have our friends at ServPro making the show possible there as well. Speaking of rain, you know, sometimes if you have like a roof issue or something like that, rain gets into your house and creates a mess, right? The one thing we know is that water can make a mess of just about anything. You give water enough time, it'll make the Grand Canyon. And obviously in your own home, it can create, you know, a pretty big mess to clean up there as well. The same thing if you've ever had like a fire accident or you know, something along those lines, sort of electrifier, something like that. These types of things can just leave a really big mess that needs to be cleaned up. And when you see a significant problem like that in a property that you own, whether it's the home you live in or your commercial, you know, property, or perhaps it's rental property or, you know, something along those lines, well, you want that sort of cleaned up and put back together like it never even happened. And that's what the restoration specialists of ServPro are all about. I've been able to recommend them here on Dog Nation Daily for quite some time, and now they're the sponsor for our program each and every Tuesday, which I obviously love because I know how important it is. If you find yourself facing a, you know, a serious situation where you've had significant damage to the home that you live in, you know, being able to introduce you to those restoration specialists who come out. If you're watching a video, you see all the equipment they put to work there, all the stuff they do. We've even seen this firsthand here at our previous studio there, Dog Nation. They showed up and did some great work for us. They can show up and do great work there for you, too. If you need something cleaned up, if you need something put back together, if you want it to look like whatever thing happened that caused the damage, if you want it to look like it never even happened, that's what ServPro is all about. Each and every franchise independently owned and operated. So find them online, servpro.com, S-E-R-V, servpro.com, for a lot more on that. Great to have ServPro as a part of around the, as part of Dog Nation Daily here today. Now, we've got Connor Riley coming up in just a couple of moments. Prior to that, I want to go around the doghouse. And one of the things that I love, and I love talking about with you on the show, it's when the national outlets, the websites that cover college football, do their little blurbs, their little write-ups about certain things around college football. We just love the so-called talking season, the preseason time of year where we get a chance to sort of bide our time waiting for the games to take place and waiting for G-Day to take place by talking about what's being said from a national standpoint about Georgia. We've done that here on Dog Nation Daily since 2015. I've done that in my media career even prior to that. Just one of those things I like doing. I like looking online and looking across America to see what people are saying about college football, bringing it to you, the local audience, and saying, you know, does this reflect what we think ourselves? And one of the things that I've seen a lot, I think this is really weird. I don't think it's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just kind of weird, is that in these various write-ups where, you know, like, say, preseason top 25 teams are examined more closely or something like that, it's amazing that every time an individual player is highlighted for Georgia, it is someone who I sort of view to be somewhat off the radar just a little bit more of a deep cut or a B-side, you know, not exactly what you'd expect to see. And once again, that's not to disparage the players themselves, who we would certainly say very important for Georgia. It's just a little bit not what you'd expect when, like, say, ESPN or CBS Sports is kind of highlighting, you know, picking one player from one kind of top team and choosing to highlight them. For instance, most of the time it's starting quarterback, it's high-profile wide receiver, it's three-year starter along the offensive line or defensive line or something like that. But for Georgia, it's always, or at least as of late it has been, someone who's not really necessarily even a starter, a young player who hasn't maybe played a ton, who is perhaps expected to play a little bit more. Do you remember the other day we talked about ESPN.com, what they said about Raylan Wilson? An example of a player we would say is very important, a player that we say has a lot of promise, but not a player who's played a ton for Georgia as of yet, and yet he was tabbed to be kind of like the breakout player from ESPN.com the other day when they were looking more closely at Georgia. Another example in sort of a similar vein from CBS Sports, I'm going to show you this on the screen, their headline, College Football Rankings. Here's a key player for each top 25 team as spring practices are underway ahead of the 2024 season. The subhead is, these players will have a huge impact on how the 2024 college football season plays out. So that's a big sell job there, looking at kind of high-profile names for each of the teams. And yet for Georgia, once again, this is not to disparage the player. This is just not the sort of player I'd expect to see in a situation like that. They highlight Janelle Aguero. Now, we think Aguero's important, but that's not exactly the guy we would have expected to see from CBS Sports in a situation like that. Will Backus is the writer. What Will says is quarterback Carson Beck would be an easy pick here. In fact, we just talked about Carson a moment ago. Backus goes on to say, but he's expected to have a big impact after a stellar first season as Georgia's starter. Instead, the Bulldogs need a versatile secondary player to step up after losing do-it-all safety Javon Bullard and starting nickel Tyke Smith. Aguero, Backus says, who could play safety or slot corner, is going to have an opportunity to start. Though Georgia's defense rarely falls below elite status, the Bulldogs have always been able to rely on solid back-end play. Aguero needs to fill that role in some capacity to help Georgia stay consistent. Now, there is not one thing incorrect about what Will Backus says there. That Aguero could be Georgia's star this year, and that's a guy that's on the field more than half the time. That's a really important player for the Georgia defense. In a roundabout way, and I guess this just shows my level of sort of disregard for the national media sometimes, that's a little bit more of an informed opinion about UGA than I've come to expect from the national media, so perhaps that's why it's surprising that they would highlight something in Georgia's case that probably is really important, even though most of their readers have never heard of Janelle Aguero, despite the fact that Aguero was an elite recruit. That's not a famous name necessarily to everyone kind of tuning in nationally on something like that, but Backus' overall take is right. And last year, Tyke Smith did have a very successful year for UGA, kind of culminating what had been kind of a long and winding journey for him there at Georgia, was very important for Georgia last season. And in his wake, a guy like Aguero has his chance to show what he is all about as a former elite recruit. Now, as luck would have it, Tyke Smith the other day was talking about Janelle Aguero and kind of what he sees from Aguero as Tyke now moves on to the NFL. So here is some words from Tyke to sort of back up why Will Backus was writing about him at CBSSports.com, Tyke Smith on Janelle Aguero.
I think he's going to have a tremendous year. So that started with the spring now. So I'm make sure I'm out there at the spring practice helping him through this time, because spring practice is a little longer. So you might install in a little bit more that you might not install during the season. So it might be a little more of a load. So, yeah, just being out there to help him and tell him what I see from the sideline perspective and how to go about stuff. I mean, Coach Mark going to get on him because he's trying to hold him to the expectations. So trying to let him know, don't listen to the tone, listen to the message. And then, like I said, just trying to help him through his journey this year. And hopefully he have a big year. Well, him having a big year, I think that's also going to improve the defense and then on the back end. So real excited for what he's going to bring.
I mean, that's rock solid analysis. By the way, Tyke joins, I believe, Kamari Laster, who said this the other day, don't listen to the tone, listen to the message. That's probably pretty good advice for all athletes when it comes to coaches sometime. It's interesting stuff. And I think that Tyke is absolutely right when he says, listen, if a guy like Aguero can really become, you know, kind of that sort of back-end performer in that start position the way that Tyke himself was for a lot of last year, that probably does make the Georgia defense just sort of better overall. I believe that Tyke's probably right about that. And that wasn't the only interesting thing that Tyke Smith had to say, because another name that Tyke kind of brought up the other day was Ellis Robinson, an incoming, you know, freshman cornerback there as well. What you're reminded of here is that defensive secondary, we've probably talked less about that position group than we have some of the others thus far this spring. But it's one of the spots where you may have as much intrigue as anything, because on the one hand, you've got a guy like Malachi Starks, who is one of the very best players in America. We certainly understand that. And when you look at some of the other spots, it seems like there is a lot of competition right now. Now, it's not the kind of competition where I think you're all that worried about who emerges, because it's really more about you've got more good players and you've got spots in the field, so who are the very best and who get a chance to be there? For instance, like a Daniel Harris battling against a Julian Humphrey, as a for instance. We would say both those guys are perhaps good enough to play, and the fact that both those guys chose not to transfer during this offseason, that's probably really good news for UGA. But in terms of a spot to play in, there may be room for just one at a time on the field between those two, so you're watching that competition to see how it plays out. But when you consider what an Ellis Robinson might be there as well, the sort of freshman, as others have said this offseason, becomes pretty hard to keep off the field because of how highly he's rated and the fact that thus far he hasn't done anything to make people think he was overrated coming out of high school. Even someone who's perhaps seemingly entrenched as a starter like Dalen Everett, no disrespect to Dalen, but like Dalen Everett, when you've got the Harrises and the Humphreys and now the Ellis Robinsons vying for playing time, even his spot's perhaps not secure and not guaranteed there as well. That Aguero fighting to be a star, Ellis Robinson fighting for some of that playing time, perhaps jumping the line a bit as an incoming freshman trying to get it. It creates a scenario where the defensive secondary is truly a fascinating spot for Georgia. And with that in mind, more from Tyke Smith the other day talking about what Ellis Robinson brings to the table.
Ain't too many coming, but I like the way Ellis Robinson looked, coming out there and not being scared. Been out there with some fifth-year guys and hadn't thud those guys and had been in the weight room for 5 years. So real excited for the way he came out there and competed.
So listen, when you talk about what spring practice is supposed to be, intense competition all over the place, defensive secondary is a spot where that certainly holds to form. We expect Georgia to have a great group of defensive backs and almost always does. We expect some newish players, whether it's a guy like Aguero who's been here or a guy like Robinson who's fresh here, we expect them to sort of pushed into that competition and kind of raised the temperature of that. And thus far during spring practice, it seems like that might be playing out exactly as you assume it possibly would. And that is around the doghouse here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ServPro. All right, before we're done in the program, a little bit of an interesting rumor about one of the biggest names in SEC coaching who might be in a little bit of trouble. There is, I think, a little bit of chatter here, and some of y'all have pointed this out to me about perhaps Georgia not being done any favors by its media partner. Some of y'all noticing that. We'll talk to you more. I mean like TV media partner, by the way. We'll talk to you more about that here in a little bit there as well. But for now, on everything with spring practice, on some of the news from the weekend, kind of a wild time that it was, let's cover all of that as we always do here on a Tuesday with Connor Riley. Great to have him and all of you here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ServPro.
And across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Let's bring in Connor Riley. Of course, we'll hear from Kirby Smart and I believe some Georgia players here today from Athens, so that's always going to be a lot of fun. Connor, before we kind of get more into some of the crazy stuff in the weekend, Let me do a little bit on spring practice here, including the topics I was just addressing. I think the defensive secondary is really fun for Georgia right now. Fun for fans because there are a lot of unanswered questions, but boy, seemingly some emphatic answers there right now. And other than Malachi Starks, I don't think that you can rubber stamp anything in terms of being a guarantee. I still like Dalen Everett as a player. I think that Everett has a chance to be a major contributor for Georgia, but I couldn't even guarantee his starting spot right now, I don't think. Harris and Humphrey didn't transfer. They're major factors in all of this. CBS writing about Janelle Aguero, major factor. Ellis Robinson, hard to keep off the field. Really interesting what's happening there in the defensive secondary. And if competition is the name of the game for spring practice, you're seeing a lot of it on the back end of that Georgia defense right now, right?
Yeah, we're going to get a chance to hear today from Ja'Cory Thomas. I think another safety name to keep in mind there. And also Julian Humphrey as well. And so, you know, in thinking about the secondary, sure, you've got Malachi Starks as I think that like Caitlin Clark type figure, just sort of the best player in that secondary and someone who's going to make everyone else's life easier. And it'll be interesting in seeing how Starks' teammates sort of rise to his level of standard. Now, obviously, Starks a little banged up this spring, recovering from a shoulder injury. He's obviously going to be fully go come September. But I think moving forward with this secondary, how do you go about filling out the rest of those spots? And look, traditionally, Georgia hasn't rotated a ton at cornerback. I think with the depth that they have this year, I think you're going to see that a lot more. Dalen Everett, Julian Humphrey, Daniel Harris, I think those guys are sort of the three at the start. But Ellis Robinson is absolutely someone who's talented enough to push for a starting job, in my opinion, probably later in the year more so than early in the year. And then at the safeties and star spot, safety, you know, David Daniel is someone who obviously know. Dan Jackson has played a ton of snaps. I'm interested in seeing how Jake Pope continues to step up. And as mentioned before, we'll get a chance to hear from Ja'Cory Thomas today. And then with Janelle Aguero, it's hard to say if Georgia's going to have guys locked into starting positions, but I think the Bulldogs would really, really benefit if Janelle Aguero goes out and has a strong spring and sort of emerges as the guy at that star position, because I just think it means fitting the rest of the puzzle pieces in this secondary all that much easier.
On the other side of the ball, we were kind of making something of the fact that Marcus Rosemary Jackson the other day said that he thought that Anthony Evans could be a baller in this Georgia offense. I like that phrase. And yet it also sort of feels somewhat sinful around Georgia football to like hype up guys who haven't done it yet, newcomers, because that's just so out of bounds for what the program typically does. But Connor, you know, Georgia needs some ballers on offense. Like you know, Brock Bowers, an unquestioned baller, is not here anymore. So if Georgia's going to be what it has been, then you got to have, whether it be Dylan Bell stepping up or Anthony Evans stepping up or the Colby Young rumors turning out to be true, that Georgia's got to have some ballers there on offense. And so when I do hear buzz, whether it be from Terrence Edwards last week or what people are kind of saying in the whisper campaigns, which is a big part of what spring practice is, you know, somebody's got to be a baller. And so why not Anthony Evans and why not some of these other guys there as well? What do you make of the unofficial chatter, the whisper campaign about who might be looking good on the offensive side of the ball during spring practice right now?
Yeah, I think we've touched on this before. I think you obviously have to start with Colby Young, just his size. You know, it stands out much like in The Bachelor, you know, those first impressions when they get out of the limousine. Colby Young seeing him for the first time really jumps out. And then you hear how well he has done in these drills, in these practices, getting better with each practice. I think that's really encouraging there. Look, we've written a lot about Anthony Evans this offseason and what he might be able to do for Georgia moving forward. I think his speed is a separator in this room other than Arian Smith. I don't think there's really anyone that brings that element to the table like Evans does. We saw what he could do as a punt returner last year in the SEC championship game. He caught his first career touchdown in the blowout win over Florida State. And so I think with Evans, it's, you know, again, baller might be a bit tough of a word for him to live up to, but can he go from a guy who wasn't a factor in 2023 to being a guy who I think, like Dylan Bell a season ago, emerged over the course of the year and used his versatility to impact the game in a variety of roles? I think to me, that's sort of the comparison with Anthony Evans that I'm looking to see, and it's the step he made. You know, I'm not expecting him to you know, lead Georgia in receiving or anything like that. And I don't think anyone is. But can Anthony Evans sort of do what Dylan Bell did a season ago and go from a guy who, you know, had some nice moments as a freshman and then had more consistent moments in that sophomore season? If he's able to do that, along with what Georgia has in Colby Young, Dylan Bell, Dominic Lovett, the wide receiver room really begins to take shape there.
I think it's really interesting. I want to spend some time here on some of the crazy stuff that's happened for UGA recruiting over the course of the last couple of days. You and I got together on video on Saturday when Jared Curtis, the top quarterback in 2026, committed to Georgia. And I think that was pretty unexpected news. And I think the question a lot of folks would be asking is, you know, why now? Why is Curtis making the decision right now when it seems like there's so much attention on what Georgia's going to do for 2025? What was the Curtis thing about? This is obviously rampant speculation, and that's perhaps a little bit risky, but I think the events of the following day perhaps gave some understanding of that. Maybe Georgia anticipating with all those guys going out to California, that could be a negative headline for UGA recruiting, and so therefore blunting some of that with the Curtis thing. Maybe that's what that was perhaps about. I don't know, but let's start with the good part of this. You know, what did you make of both the timing and just the announcement itself of Jared Curtis? And then we'll get to the other stuff that happened there on Sunday. But starting with Curtis, a very, very big name in the class of 2026, who is now committed to UGA.
Yeah, it's obviously our job to, I think, put this news into context and talk about it and discuss it. But I also don't blame fans for being skeptical or you know, saying, okay, like, yeah, he's really talented and we're glad he's at Georgia, but is he ultimately going to end up at Georgia? Because I think you can look at what happened with Justice Terry this weekend and show just, you know, the dangers of committing so early, especially in an NIL world. You know, Curtis, obviously fabulously talented. As a high school sophomore, the fact that he's already 6'4", 225, you know, it's the type of things that you see from quarterbacks like a Josh Allen and Justin Herbert, that size at the next level. To have that as a 16-year-old, 17-year-old in high school, obviously he has a lot of tools and plays in a competitive Nashville league. So I'm really interested in seeing how he continues to develop. I think there were a lot of questions about recruiting the quarterback position for Georgia as it pertained to the 2025 recruiting class. I think the presence of Curtis now only raises further questions in some regard. But obviously, I think as well, I think this makes it a little bit more clear in terms of what Georgia wants to do specifically at that quarterback position in saying, like, hey, we all love you guys. We expect you to be really talented players. We believe you can succeed and thrive here. But you're going to have to come in and compete. It's not going to be, yeah, we're going to recruit you and you're going to be our quarterback for 3 years and you're going to go on to the NFL and we're going to recruit a bunch of stiffs behind you. That is not the case. And that's not the case at any position at Georgia. And this is, I think, Kirby Smart putting his money where his mouth is and leaning into that philosophy there. So I'm really interested in seeing more so what this Curtis move does moving forward for guys like Lewis and Zollers, who are just going to be on campus sooner rather than Jared Curtis. Because again, I think it's fair to point out, especially look, we just saw it with Dylan Raiola last year, where it seemed like he was lockstep coming to Georgia. And then the week before he set to enroll, he ultimately ends up going to Nebraska.
On the Justice Terry stuff, I think it's a topic that has to be addressed from a couple of different angles. You know, the first angle is this, that if you're Georgia, I don't think you have the opportunity to sort of disregard all of this and say, hey, we're going to go after the guys that want to be here. We're going to trust our development, trust our scouting, and we're not going to play the game that maybe programs like USC allegedly are playing when they, you know, somewhat surprisingly flip a guy like Terry away from Georgia the way they did this weekend. I get the sentiment to want to say that, but the truth is, you can't win championships without elite defensive linemen. And some of those guys can be developed. Jordan Davis was. I believe that Devontae Wyatt was. But Georgia's also greatly benefited from the sort of obvious prospects like a Jalen Carter and Trayvon Walker that everyone could have recognized as elite recruits, that you've got to have some of those guys too. And in this day and age, Connor, we sort of live in a world in which the sort of obvious elite defensive line talents come with a pretty high NIL price. And I just think that Georgia's going to have to play that game to a certain extent if it wants the kind of players that keep them in the national championship business. What do you make of the Terry stuff as it has played out?
Yeah, I think it's important to remember now, this type of recruiting is no longer illicit. It is something where, you know, NIL is going to be a factor. Now, you and I maybe disagree on this. So I don't know how strongly you feel on it. I 100% believe Georgia has a competitive NIL, you know, arm program, whatever you want to call it, when it comes to recruiting. You don't sign the number one recruiting class in the country if you don't, which is something they did in the 2024 cycle. And look, they signed, you know, Joseph Ajonah-Ajani out of Texas, a five-star defensive lineman. I actually hearken this back to Mykel Williams back in the 2022 cycle, where he commits early to USC. And as the recruiting calendar sort of goes and the distance between Georgia, where Terry is from, where Isaiah Gibson out of Warner Robins is from as well, to USC sort of sets in, and the fact that you can go and see Georgia every weekend, I think that is certainly going to wear on Terry going forward. And look, Georgia is going, in my mind, to be competitive in NIL. It wouldn't surprise me today if Kirby is asked about NIL and recruiting and says something in that regard there. So, yes, it's worth noting that, yes, Georgia has to be competitive in this aspect. And this is maybe a reminder to that of how quickly these things can change. But the fact that this is happening in, say, March rather than late November, early December, I think is perhaps more encouraging. And it is a wake-up call to Georgia in that sense, but it's not something that they can't recover from. And I think if you and I were being honest here, if we were into placing wagers, which is illicit in the state of Georgia and something we can't do, I think we'd probably bet on Terry still ending up in this Georgia class moving forward.
I would agree with that. I think, and that's one of the reasons why I think that the conversation is less to me about what is Terry going to do, because I'm like you, I would assume that he'll eventually come back to Georgia. It's more about, you know, kind of what this says about the current landscape of recruiting. I also totally agree. Everybody that I've ever talked to would lead me to believe that Georgia is competitive with anyone when it comes to NIL. They essentially have a similar pot of money available to them that most of the top flight programs have. I think what's going to become interesting in the future, Connor, the next couple of months, next couple of years, is how you choose to use that money. The other day, Kirby Smart talked about, you know, whether or not the system is fair for the older players, if it's the younger guys who haven't proven anything who are getting the most money. But my response to that would be the NFL sort of functions a little bit that way too, where on most teams, the higher paid players oftentimes are first round draft picks who haven't done anything yet. That's just how the league salary structure is sort of set up, that it could come down in the future, Connor, not how does Georgia raise money, but what does it choose to do with the money that it does raise? How does it choose to allocate that? And I think that could be a big part of the situation in the future of strategically putting as much of that money as possible into the decisions that have a chance to impact your winning and losing the most, which means that some players may get less in the future. Some players may not get anything in the future, but making sure you've got the right dollars to put in the truly impactful decisions, that may be a hard call that coaches like Kirby Smart have to make in the future.
I'll put your feet to the fire here. Would you give more NIL money to Justice Terry or Juju Lewis?
Justice Terry. I've said this over and over again. No disrespect to Juju, who I do like. I've seen him play in person many times. But if I was like the GM of Georgia football, I'm putting my money on Terry. I'm putting my money on Elijah Griffin. I'm putting my money on David Sanders. I'm putting my money on Juan Gaston, Cortez Smith. I'm putting my money on line of scrimmage guys. Georgia's got a two-year blueprint of this. Good at quarterback. Good talent on offense, great on defense, great on the offensive line. That is a year-over-year blueprint for two national championships for Georgia. That's the version of Georgia I'd want to build in the future there as well. Once again, it seems like I'm kind of like downplaying Juju as a prospect. I'm not. I just think that the established template for Georgia is as good as you can be on both lines of scrimmage, as good as you can be on defense. And coaching up the offense to the kind of statistical success that Georgia enjoyed when Todd Monken was offensive coordinator here in 21 and 22, that to me is the established template. And with all due respect, I don't need Julian Lewis to necessarily go out and do that.
And I think it's worth pointing this out as well. You know, there's going to be a zero-sum game in this. You know, there's no such thing as a free lunch opportunity cost here. I actually think you're okay, quote unquote, overpaying for offensive and defensive line talents coming out of the high school recruiting rankings, just because we've seen, and look, you can look at Carson Beck as an example for this. If you're a quarterback and you play well and get on the field, you can make a ton of money really, really quickly from outside NIL sources. You know, Carson Beck now has a Lamborghini. I don't believe there are any Georgia offensive and defensive linemen that have that sort of car profile there. And so, you know, you understand that, yes, you might be paying a little bit more up front, but that investment is going to help you out long term. Whereas with quarterback, you know, and again, you have to maybe convince them that, hey, we're going to give these guys up front a little bit more money. But over time, you, if get on the field, can absolutely make more than them. And so I think that at some point, you know, look, I don't know how many people want to get into a discussion of economics when it comes to NIL, but eventually I do think that it can get to that point. And that's maybe perhaps a further reason why you're okay over-investing in that offensive and defensive line rather than trying to spend so much to get a quarterback that you don't have enough to get the guys in front or the guys in the defensive line that really make a difference.
Well, in the time we have left, let's talk about Trevor Etienne or ETN, because I believe that Kirby Smart will probably be asked and will address this situation today. People know was arrested on suspicion of DUI on Sunday. And I think my opinion on this may be somewhat different than some. I don't want people who are not 21 to be drinking. And I think aggressive policing is a pretty good way to prevent that. To me, this is the system sort of working how it's supposed to. ETN shouldn't have done what he did. The fact that the police caught him is one of the ways in which we kind of prevent that in society. I just think that to me, that's what this sort of is. ETN's going to face some punishment for that, but I'm not casting him as a side as a player because of that. I'm not mad at the police for doing their job. This is how I believe societies are supposed to function. And as far as trying to connect this to some other stories that relates to Georgia, I just don't buy into that necessarily. I'm not punishing ETN more excessively because of something that someone else allegedly may have done in the past. This is a thing that happened. As a Georgia fan, I'm disappointed that it did. But to me, this is what society does. When a young person steps out of bounds, law enforcement is there to, kind of try to bring you back. And thankfully, the only consequence that ETN suffered for his decision was getting pulled over and getting arrested. To me, it's as simple as that. What do you make about it? And what do you believe that Kirby Smart will say about it today?
Yeah, in a vacuum, this is just a very, very poor decision by ETN. We have the police report now. That story will be on DogNation.com here shortly. Did not submit to a breathalyzer test, but admitted to having drink over the course of the evening. There was some reckless driving per the police report. And so that was what led to the initial pullover. And then obviously in speaking with ETN, the officer made the decision that he made to charge him with those four charges. And look, like Trevor Etienne wasn't on the team last year. I don't know how much he was paying attention to what was going on in this program where there were five driving-related arrests over the course of the year. And also, obviously, the horrible tragedy involving Devin Willock and Chandler LaCroix. So it might just be one of those things where perhaps he was naive to the way that this was going to be viewed within the Georgia program. Certainly maybe perhaps from an outside standpoint. But I think it's one of those things like Kirby's going to have to get up there and talk about it. And I agree with you. And this was sort of something that developed over the course of last year. When national media outlets, people came down very hard on this Georgia program in terms of, what could Kirby be doing? Look, I have no doubt in my mind that Kirby has said, hey, if you're out and you need a ride, we have people that you can call that will come pick you up and take you home. And so, the fact that this happens, look, it's Trevor's, I believe, third month here in the program. It's a learning experience. I don't think he should be kicked off the team. I don't believe he should be cast aside. I do believe he should be suspended for the Clemson game because that is the next game. And he should probably be suspended for the Tennessee Tech game as well, in my opinion. But we'll see what Georgia ultimately decides to do from a punishment standpoint. I don't expect Kirby to come out and say that today. He's going to say his usual line of it'll be handled internally. But this is just, I think, a situation where I agree with you on its own. It's unfortunate it happened. This is a dumb thing to happen in terms of, Trevor making these decisions. But, want to blow this up into something different, I don't know if that's entirely fair either. And to write Trevor off as well, I'll point out Marcus Rosemead Jack Saint got arrested last year for speeding in May, served a one-game suspension, and he was still voted a team captain. So this is not an end-all for Trevor in his time at Georgia. It's an unfortunate story, and I don't think anybody wants to be talking about this or dealing with it or discussing it, but this is just sort of the reality we live with given the events that happened with this program in 2023.
Yeah, quick final thought for me. The other day we saw a Michigan assistant coach who had to resign after getting a DUI. And obviously, to me, that speaks to a huge difference between when a full-grown adult in a sort of professional phase of life has something happen. There's a little bit of a different standard there than a young person like this. Who, I mean, first of all, how is he still so young? It seems like he's been in college football for a little while here. He's still a pretty young guy. When a guy like that's going through a situation like that, I mean, I still want college to be a place for, growth and development. I know that we live in an NIL age, But I don't think of these players as professionals. I don't. I think of them as developing into full-fledged adulthood. I know they are old enough to die in the war and stuff like that, and I've heard that, you know, said before there as well. But I still sort of feel like the college age of life is a place for growth and development, and this, to me, is a part of that. And I just think that's an important thing to keep in mind. It's not a full-fledged adult who's sort of a finished product in life the way that an assistant coach for a program might be. This is a player who's still sort of figuring that out. And whether it be Georgia or even Florida, who I don't like, I want to create some space for these players to have some of that go on. Now, obviously, one of the hard things about life is you can have some very, very serious consequences for a couple of seconds worth of bad decision. I get that part of it too. But I just think it's important to keep the other part of this in mind of these are still players who are kind of learning how to be full-fledged men.
Yeah, Trevor Etienne made a mistake, and he's, you know, like all humans, he's going to make more mistakes going forward. I think the big thing is, what does he learn from this and how does he grow from it? And I think he has the opportunity to do so. And I know there are a lot of people rooting for him to make that decision to grow moving forward. So I'll be very interested in seeing ultimately, you know, how this impacts him in his time at Georgia. This could very well be a minor footnote in his career here, or this could potentially be something that defines him. I think that speaks to your point of, you know, this is a young man that is going through life and what is right now a difficult life experience because of the actions of his consequence, or the consequences of his actions, excuse me. And so it'll be interesting in seeing how Trevor bounces back from this if he does end up doing so. I don't believe that Georgia would have brought him in if they believe that A, this is something indicative of who he is as a person, and B, that he couldn't possibly bounce back and grow and learn from this. I believe what Georgia teammates and Kirby Smart were saying about ETN in terms of him coming into the program, buying in, doing things the right way. And I believe that, and I will continue to believe that, even with this DUI not being something that you obviously want to have happen.
Connor, great stuff. We're looking forward to your coverage in Athens today. Obviously, hearing from Kirby Smart and some Georgia players and the spring practice rolling on there for UGA. Appreciate that. We'll look forward to having you back here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by ServPro again very soon as well.
As always, it was a pleasure, BA.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
One more thing about the Trevor Etienne news. I think one of the reasons why it's going to get so much attention is because Etienne, I think, unquestionably had been one of the better stories for Georgia in spring practice here thus far. He had seemingly come on board and, you know, kind of got acquainted with what Georgia football is about pretty quickly. And so far, everything related to Etienne, once again, a lot of this is sort of whispers and innuendo, but so far, everything had been really, really positive. And so when you have something like this that's a clear rebuke of all the other good news, it's going to just get more attention, I think, just simply because it was kind of upending what had been a really, really positive story. So I think that's part of that that's kind of going on there on that. Let's get ready to go cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Of course, that Dog Nation cruise coming up in just a few days for us. We're actually almost in the month of, by next week, we'll be kind of in the month of the Dog Nation cruise. And we're hearing so much excitement on a regular basis that people have about being on board Allure of the Seas and the fun that that's going to be. And it's a reminder to you, you can have your own version of fun with Royal Caribbean here in 2024 there as well. And so many of those, you know, ship itineraries take you to Perfect Day, Coco Cay. Really, for those of you who have not had the experience of a Royal Caribbean cruise vacation before, it's really Perfect Day, Coco Cay, the private island right there in the Bahamas, that I think just sort of sets this apart from anything else. And it's the one reason why I love for people to experience Royal Caribbean for the very first time, because this private island where you have the thrill side and you have the chill side, if you're watching on video, you see that. Just the fun that you have, you know, tallest water slide in North America, the Splash Away Bay there for the kids, largest wave pool in the Bahamas. How about Oasis Lagoon over there on the chill side where you can kind of relax and enjoy the pool? And now you got Hideaway Beach, which is a brand new experience for the very first time there, with the cabanas and the DJ in the pool and the swim up bar and kind of that experience. If you want kind of the Vegas style pool party, that's been added to the scene there at Perfect Day Coco Cay, which really makes the experience better than it's ever been before. And you got a wonderful sort of infinity edge pool that kind of looks over the Bahamian waters there. It's a great thing. I can't wait to be there. Looking forward to that. Jessica Slater, terrific travel agent. You know, she was really specially selected for us by Royal Caribbean to plan our Royal Caribbean cruise vacations, including our DogNation.com. So she can help you out as well. give her a call, 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. You can also email her, jslater@dreamvacations.com. She'll tell you about Hideaway Beach. She'll tell you about all the fun things happening at Perfect Day Coco Cay. All right, let's go cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean, for a moment. Interesting developments in Lexington, where this week the expectation is Kentucky coach John Calipari is meeting with Kentucky athletic director Mitch Barnhart. Now, as we've told you for a while, the entire vibe in Lexington is really weird, where Barnhart's not super popular. You know, there's been a little bit of a feud between Mark Stoops, the football coach, and John Calipari, the basketball coach. Stoops, it seemed, wanted to leave, try to become Texas A&M coach. Their fans revolted on that. He had to go back to Kentucky. And now, obviously, another unceremonious exit for Kentucky in the NCAA tournament has kind of put John Calipari's future very much in doubt there. In fact, there are some pretty high-profile people who are very close to the Kentucky program who are saying it'd just be better if Calipari just left. You know, Calipari is one of those guys that seems to be very sort of stuck in his ways, maybe. You know, this is a guy who feels like he is impacting the NBA future for the players who come into the program. And he sort of says, beyond that, I don't really care as much about other things. Told you this the other day. I know some of y'all know some Kentucky fans. You'd say Kentucky basketball fans are some of the most obnoxious people you ever meet. There's an extent that that's probably true. I still sort of feel sorry for them because they just watch their team disappoint year after year, and there's almost not enough humility on the part of John Calipari to say, you know, we got to win more games. We're going to have these kind of recruits. They're going to have these bright NBA futures. Perhaps it'd be good for them to win some games while they're playing in college. And Calipari just doesn't seem to say that a whole lot. Now, they've spent big on Calipari, and if they don't, you know, want to keep him as coach, you're left to wonder, well, who's of a high-profile enough nature in this day and age to actually be a sufficient replacement for Calipari? It's not obvious there is an easy answer to that question here right now. We would have to see. The other thing that comes up is, and you would think that this would be the exact opposite because of what, you know, Kentucky might be by reputation, but the truth is they have a fairly, I think, based on some of the reporting that's out there, inefficient NIL operation where they just maybe haven't been as buttoned up as they could be, haven't been as, you know, obviously everybody sort of recognizes the NIL demand, but cultivating the supply, maybe Kentucky hasn't been good enough at that, or, you know, connecting potential NIL donors or, you know, commercial endorsers or, you know, companies that wanted commercial endorsers with some of those players. It sounds like they have a little bit of a sloppy NIL operation. You know, perhaps that changes, but it's a weird time at Kentucky where they are the unquestioned blue blood program, but their, you know, success is so far removed from present day that, I mean, I think if you're just sort of a rank and file Wildcat fan, the sort of folks we speak to, you know, here on Dog Nation Daily, that version of Kentucky fan, my guess is you probably are looking for change. And if I was doing a show in Lexington the way we do this show down here in Georgia, I believe the right thing to be on the side of the fans is calling for that change. But it's not obvious at Kentucky right now if that change is going to come. Some of y'all sent this to me, and I wanted to mention this because I noticed it myself. It was announced this week that for the very first time, Fox is going to put Ohio State's spring game on over-the-air broadcast television. They are going to televise that at a time in which ESPN, who has full control over the entirety of the SEC, seems really committed to making those spring games a streaming video product. This is despite the fact that the SEC seems to have the, I don't know, satellite space or whatever you want to say it. They seem to have the real estate available to televise these games if they want to on the SEC network, on ESPN, or ESPN2, they could do more of this. It seems to be a sort of a deliberate choice not to put more of these games on television. And Fox is choosing to do the opposite here on their major network with the Ohio State spring game here for the first time. And this leads me to kind of renew a point that I've made in the past. I believe that right now Fox is a better media partner for the Big Ten than ESPN is for the SEC. And I think you got to ask yourself the question. You know, one of the things that ESPN sort of touted as to why it recently got the new contract for the extension of the college football playoff is their ability to kind of be around college football 365 days a year and the sort of breadth of their network. But if you don't choose to use that on a regular basis, are you really taking full advantage of the product you have? And, you know, the SEC leapt at the opportunity to work with ESPN and made it its full media rights partner because ESPN was going to give the SEC more money than CBS was either willing to or capable of doing. And you kind of understand to a certain extent why they made that decision. But what does the ESPN give the SEC in exchange for its exclusive loyalty, its exclusivity and its loyalty? What is ESPN giving the SEC right now? It's not additional revenue for a ninth conference game. It's not televised spring games. And listen, even in a world in which we're all kind of getting pretty comfortable with getting entertainment via streaming, Netflix, Disney Plus, some of you do Apple, there is still a difference in watching sports on streaming compared to TV. There just is. There's still a difference in that regard. And so I do think it's fair to ask, in exchange for everything that the SEC's given ESPN, what is ESPN giving back to the SEC? And what expectations should we have that that ESPN shine a spotlight on the SEC? I would suggest that they could do more than they currently are. I'll give you one final thing here for a moment. I saw an interesting exchange involving Kirk Herbstreit, who has sort of spoken out, and perhaps somewhat melodramatically, about his relationship with Florida State fans right now, after Florida State fans very unhappy with the fact that Herbstreit was so against them making the college football playoff. I want to read the quote here from Herbstreit. He says, "I just want you to know I'm sorry we had a disagreement about it." I feel like we should have like sort of soft like piano music sort of like playing. "I just want you to know I'm sorry we had a disagreement about the teams we had at the end of the year. I've never been a guy that tries to intentionally upset fans with my comments. I've always tried to be very professional and respectful to everyone with my thoughts. I do a lot of prep and just give my boy." He always goes back to the work that he's doing. Nobody works harder than Kirk Herbstreit. Just ask him. He says, "If you agree or disagree, it's all good. Nothing has ever been personal towards any team or conference. I just give my opinion." He goes on to say, and this was all done on X, "I hate that some FSU fans are making it so personal. I have respected the Noles for decades. We'll continue to do so. I understand the venom towards me. I really do. I wish Florida State fans nothing but the best and can't wait to see Coach Norvell and his squad this fall. No matter how many of you come at me on here, I've got nothing but love for the Noles brand and wish you the best always." So Kirk Herbstreit, another opportunity to sort of be, I would say, somewhat melodramatic about his relationship with various fan bases here right now. And listen, we would never support and we condemn in the highest possible fashion anybody who ever makes attacks personal and things like that. That's a really bad thing to do. And that's just bad. We don't support that at all. But the idea that, you know, putting aside any kind of truly unfortunate behavior, the idea that it's supposed to be you just sort of shrug it off when your team's excluded from the college football playoff of, "Oh, well, you know, I guess we'll try again next year." In the case of Florida State, even though I think their case for being excluded in the playoff was more, you know, sufficient than they probably realize, I do sort of understand where they're coming from on this of, hey, we're playing a little bit of a zero-sum game here. And there does seem to be a lot going on behind the scenes that isn't always fully described in clear and transparent terms. You know, we don't have any idea about the deliberations that go on behind closed doors. And we don't know the degree to which, you know, prominent voices like Herbstreit have some sort of influence on this and certainly have, you know, a set of predetermined outcomes that you know, they're more than happy to kind of tout on a regular basis, that when the stakes are as high as they are, so much money and frankly access, right? I mean, you know, Florida State sort of is now left to feel like they've been kicked out of the college football club until they find a way to exit the ACC. You know, this idea that people are supposed to have kind of a, you know, shrug it off mentality about stuff like this, I don't think that reflects the reality here where college football has become sort of a play-for-keeps game where seemingly everyone is doing anything they can to give themselves whatever advantage possible. A lot of that's related to the kind of the monetary stuff. I just think that's kind of important to keep in mind. Now, as I said before, that doesn't excuse bad behavior, but in terms of the intensity of the conversation and the fact that feelings that get hurt don't get easily mended, when you see how high the stakes have become, I would say to a certain extent, some of that is somewhat understandable. We'll make that cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. So over the weekend, Georgia got some good news. Diamond Dogs against a highly ranked Alabama team got a sweep there at Foley Field. Obviously, kind of a nice turnabout of events after being swept at Kentucky the weekend prior. And our buddy Mad Dog, who is such a great follow on social media, shared this from a guy named Jacob Hogg. Jacob, I don't know, but this is really funny. It's sort of like a Lego character, Diamond Dog, standing on top of an elephant using the broom. As a child at heart, I've always loved Legos and I always will love Legos. And I love to see the sort of Lego style here of all of this. That's really well done by Jacob. Mad Dog, so the sort of retweeted this into my orbit. So that is all really fun. We'll give golden shoes all the way around there. Always fun to see Georgia getting over on Alabama. Lousy, stinking Gators. About 1,235 days. That's how long it's been since they've beaten Georgia. And that is our Gator Hater Updater. Good luck to the Georgia basketball team. We'll see all of you back here tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by ServPro.